I have the good fortune to be joined on the line by one of the great young violinists of our time. That is Augustin Haderlich. Hello, Augustin.
Hi, it's great to speak to you.
Yeah, now folks out here in Toledo, of course, remember you from your appearances here with the Toledo Symphony, including your performance of that Dvorak concerto back in 2017, I believe it was. Good to have you on the line. We're talking today about a new release that you have out, which is titled Bohemian Tales, and it includes that wonderful Dvorak violin concerto, but also music by Lajos Janáček and Jozef Suk. And I wonder if you could start out by telling us how the idea came about to bring these three composers together for this one album.
Well, I think the starting point for the album was the Dvorak violin concerto, and it was this live recording that I that's on this album with the Bavarian Radio Orchestra and Jakub Ruža, Czech conductor that I've worked with quite a lot, and we've played this piece. I think this was maybe the fifth orchestra that we played it with, so we've played it together a lot, and I felt this was such an ideal collaboration, and it was recorded by the Bavarian Radio because they record all their concerts, and so that was like the original idea. I was like, can we bring this out on CD, because it was such a fun performance. And then I thought, well, what can I pair this with? And I thought of the Janáček sonata right away. So there's the obvious connection that Janáček was also Czech. But in many ways, I think of Janáček as being the polar opposite of Dvorak, as having such a totally different temperament, that if Dvorak does one thing, Janáček would do the opposite. You know, if Dvorak's music is full of like smooth, gradual transitions between characters, but Janáček loves to kind of shock us with really sudden changes in mood, and the way that he uses the violin and the piano just is so totally different. But they have this common. Their music has like a common origin in folk song and folk music of their country. So, and I love programs with contrasting pieces that do have things in common, but also things that are totally different. So I found that that really an interesting idea. So I asked Charles Owen, a pianist, an English pianist that I've played a lot of recitals with in Europe, and we've played the Janáček sonata many times in recital, and so I asked him if he wanted to come and record the rest of the CD with Czech works, and we quickly settled on the Jozef Suk four pieces, which are incredibly underrated pieces. But Jozef Suk, you know, another important Czech composer, and he was Dvořák's son-in-law, actually. So I think that in a way he's closer to Dvořák in terms of temperament, and then takes Dvořák's style like to a new place. But these are incredibly good pieces, and were a lot of fun to record. And then finally a few short pieces by Dvořák that we also included, like the Humoresque and Songs My Mother Taught Me, and Romantic Piece Number 4. So Humoresque was actually one of the first, I think it was the first piece by Dvorak that I played when I was a child. And I remember my father also played it on the cello. He was an amateur cellist. So it was a melody that I know from my childhood. It's very nostalgic, and in a way, like, it really takes me back. And I really hadn't played it since then until we started preparing for this recording. So it was it was an emotional experience.
Yeah, it's one of those pieces that has been done by lots of different combinations of instruments. Sure. I remember hearing it, I believe, in a Warner Brothers cartoon many, many years ago.
Okay, yes.
So, yeah. Not to equate, you know, the violin arrangement with cartoon music, but it has different emotions attached to it. I notice in your program notes you talk about how the violin makes it sound a little bit more melancholy or a little bit more sad even.
Yes, I think that, I mean, this might be partly due to how violinists have always played this piece, but the piano version is generally played pretty quickly. You know, a humoresque is often kind of like lighthearted, and so the piano version is often played quite quickly, but then the violin version, the violin is a lyrical instrument that kind of invites the musician to kind of, you know, to sing. And the Fritz Kreisler transcription, the way he plays it, already then, this was like in, you know, I don't know, 1920s when he made this recording of it, it already sounded nostalgic then. So it always had this feeling that I think Kreisler kind of added maybe to it. So sometimes, you know, things do change when you play them with a different instrument. But I think there is always an undercurrent in even the piano version, even if it's a little lighter, there's an undercurrent of sadness sometimes in Dvorak, that when something's very, very beautiful and you know, in major, you know, in major harmony, and you know, seemingly happy, but there's some part of it that makes you feel like it's already in the past. You're actually remembering the happiness. Yeah.
Well, I'm struck by the wide range of emotions in these pieces, even in the context of the Dvorak works that you've selected on here. There's such a wide variety, and listening to it, like if you listen to the final movement of the concerto and then you go into that romantic piece, it almost sounds like two different violins. I mean, there's so much more depth and weight to your playing in the romantic piece of Dvorak compared to the lightness and the suppleness you bring to the concerto itself. Can you talk a little bit about how you approach these different pieces of music with your Strad?
Well, actually, I should add, these are not recorded on the same violin. So
I was on to something then.
Yes, I think you are catching. But there is also, of course, a difference in character. So the last movement is so lighthearted of the Dvorak, and then you get to such a heavy place with the fourth romantic piece. So it was also intentional. But I think that the violin switch did also maybe bring that out even more. So I used to play on a 1723 Stradivari violin, which I played for almost 10 years, 9.5 years. And it was wonderful. It had a lot of wonderful qualities. And I think for that lightness, that weightlessness of the sound, it was really wonderful. But I switched violins at the end of last year to a Guarneri del Gesù violin from 1744. So I like went over to the dark side. It's actually not so dark sounding, considering there are many Guarneris that are even darker, but I think it's, for Guarneri, it's quite bright, but it has this richness, like it's very different. It was an adjustment to play it, because even the sound production is very different. It takes longer for the sound to come out, but when you have produced it, it's somehow fuller sounding. And I think for a piece that's so heavy-hearted like the fourth romantic piece, it was pretty ideal. I think also for Janáček, actually, some of this incredibly incredibly emotional, dramatic music, it brings a richness to the sound that's different.
Thank you.
Well, talk a little bit more about the Janáček Sonata, because this piece was written just around the end of the First World War, and there's something I read in here. I was not familiar with the piece, but it's just so engrossing and fantastic to listen to. But there's that movement that has like the violin imitating gunfire, which he changed from the end of the piece to the third movement of the piece, so it could have more of an elegiac kind of ending to it. Can you tell us that story?
It was the current third movement used to be the last movement originally.
Right,
and that was kind of celebratory, because he was like welcoming the Russians to Moravia, because it meant the end of the Austrian rule. But then later, he revised this piece many times. Later, he switched things around and wrote this new last movement. And it's completely counterintuitive to give the gunfire to the violin and the lyrical passage to the piano. Like, normally composers would do it the other way around, because the piano is, you know, more of a percussive instrument. But this is typical of Janáček, that he always asks you for the impossible. You know, he's always you always have to think really outside the box and try to read like between the lines, like somehow to glean the meaning of it. And it seems that his feelings about, like many Europeans, you know, once they saw what war was really like, his feelings about it changed, and it's actually it becomes very, very threatening, this approaching gunfire. And when the moment when they finally arrive is actually really, I think, traumatic, the way that it's depicted. So it's very powerful. I think in the final version is actually a very powerful anti-war statement. But I don't think that was his original intention, and he did his best to like really confuse things and obfuscate later on, and like not really let on what he was really thinking. But there are some quotes early on where it was part of like being a Czech nationalist was that you were against the Austrians, so you welcomed the Russians that were coming in, because it meant that they would fight the Austrians. But it's a very complicated history, but the emotion in his writing is incredibly intense, and it's hard to this gunfire. He gives a lot of when he in his music, he always gives a lot of like conflicting information, and so it's always like a fight with your instruments and a little bit to try to produce maybe what you think he wanted. But this effect of the gunfire approaching, it's quite loud, but at the same time you use a mute so that it sounds distant, even though it's a loud sound, but it's distant, and then it gradually comes closer. It's an extraordinary idea, and I think it does come through. You also need a pianist who really invests himself or herself emotionally, like completely in that lyrical theme of the last movement. It's unbelievably intense and comes from the voice somehow. It's written as though he was writing for the voice, even though he's writing for the piano. But you have to imagine like you're singing. So it demands a lot from the performers, but I think it's one of the most rewarding pieces for violin and piano, and one that as we played it over the years, it was always very powerful to perform it.
And powerful to listen to it, especially knowing a little bit of the story behind it and explaining some of that for us. I really appreciate that. Let me ask you, what's going on nowadays with the pandemic? I know you've been staying pretty much at home. I've been looking at those little videos on Facebook and Instagram of you playing stuff from home.
Yeah.
What is the day like for you nowadays?
Well, every day is the same, but that was a big adjustment for me. It was not easy to go from playing a lot of concerts all the time, all this excitement and feeling like you're on top of the world, and suddenly, you know, nothing's happening. But I decided that, you know, well, I just knew that I had to set some new goals for myself. I have to create something to do. And so these videos and staying in touch with listeners and fans this way, and a masterclass series, like a series of short masterclass videos that I started posting, and projects like this that have kept me motivated and kept things exciting, so that because you can really fall into a funk as a musician, and then it becomes hard to take out the violin because you're like, you know, what am I working for? What, you know? And this really helped me still, you know, enjoy every day when I take out the violin and play. That I'm always creating. I always feel like I'm working towards something. I'm creating something.
The album is called Bohemian Tales from Warner Classics. Violinist Augustin Haderlich. He's joined by the Bavarian Radio Symphony, Jakub Hruscha conducting, along with pianist Charles Owen, music of Dvorak, Janáček, and Josef Suk. Augustin, thank you so much for spending some time talking about the album with us today on FM 91.
It's great to talk to you. Thank you so much.